The Patriots can win on the road in any country. They proved that on Sunday with the win over the Oakland Raiders in Mexico City, their sixth straight victory. The Patriots' defense continued its startling turnaround. It's Monday, November 20th. I'm Chris Gasper, and this is Season Ticket. Welcome to Season Ticket, a daily podcast from the Boston Globe Sports Department and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. The Patriots made their trip south of the border a successful one. They defeated the Oakland Raiders 33-8 on Sunday. That was their sixth consecutive win. The Patriots are now 8-2 on the season and in clear command of the AFC East, competing with the Pittsburgh Steelers for the best record in the AFC. To help us discuss this game and the Patriots season through 10 games, we now bring in Boston Globe Patriots beat reporter Nora Princiati. She joins us via Skype from Mexico City. Hola, Nora.
Hi, Chris. I took 12 years of French. I'm not even going to try.
I took a lot of Spanish, and that's about as much as I know is hola. Whatever language you speak, though, you certainly recognize the Patriots' dominance in this game. They won their 13th consecutive road game. Even though this game was played in Mexico City, the Raiders gave up a home game for it, so it does count as a road game. Really, really impressive performance from the Patriots. What stood out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we need to put a new rule in where if the Patriots have an early bad loss to the Chiefs, there's got to be a no freak out rule because it just seems like everything is rounding into form and this should have been predictable. But earlier in the season, it was hard to imagine that, you know, with all the weirdness of coming down to Mexico and all the talent that the Raiders do have, even though they totally can't put it together, you know, 33-8 is not something that I think a lot of people would have predicted several weeks ago before this win streak started.
Yeah, and when you mentioned this win streak, to me, I think the thing that stands out the most is the improvement on defense, because the Patriots offense has been prolific really all season long, and Tom Brady was once again on Sunday, 30 of 37, 339 yards and three touchdowns. That was basically to be expected. He completed 81% of his passes. You expected that because the Raiders are so bad on pass defense, they let Jay Cutler complete 81% of his passes and throw three touchdowns and throw for 311 yards the last game they had played before this one. So you knew the offense was going to, you know, be steady, be good, be productive, even without Julian Edelman. But the issue in the beginning was the defense. During this six-game win streak, the defense has been a lot better. They're only allowing 12.5 points per game and no more 300-yard passers. They had done that in the first six games. Now in the last four, they haven't done that at all. What is click for this defense, Nora? And is this for real or is it just they're hot right now?
Well, I would say it's a little bit of both. Last night, I think their safeties came up really big. I mean, Patrick Chung, you know, it's been a while since anyone besides Kyle Van Noy has been the Patriots' leading tackler, and Patrick Chung was just everywhere. You know, he has that big stop on fourth down. He also had the fumble recovery.
From the pocket to the three. It's caught by Roberts. The ball is punched out and recovered by New England.
And that's big against the Raiders. They like to go to Jared Cook, the tight end, and they still didn't have much of a pass rush, and they still didn't have a great run defense up front.
Yeah, that's a good
And
sign.
So those guys, you know, Chung, McCourty, Daron Harmon, those guys stepping up big lately, and sometimes, you know, safety stats are weird, so I think it's hard to quantify. So sometimes it doesn't get a ton of attention. But I think those guys have been really, really, really big for the Patriots.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And here's what I think about the Patriots defense. It's not a dominant defense. It's never going to be a dominant defense. I know they just look at points allowed. That's the number one stat. And you're now in a situation during this win streak where no opponent has scored more than 17 points in a game, which is really good. I mean, they'll take that every time. But this defense isn't dominant, but it's disciplined. And they're back to being a defense where they're not going to beat themselves with busted coverages and miscommunications. You're going to have to beat them. You're going to have to execute against them play after play after play for 8, 9, 10 play drives, 4 or 5 times a game to score. And obviously Oakland couldn't do that. I thought Oakland's receivers were really bad in this game. The interception that Harmon had, that sort of went off the shoulder pad of Johnny Holton. I think that was a ball he could have corralled.
Carr heaves it down the field for Holton, and it's incomplete and intercepted off the deflection. That's Harmon who comes away with it.
You had the Seth Roberts fumble, a great play by Marquise Flowers, but you don't hold the ball out like that, like a loaf of bread, with your back to your own, with your back to the opponent's goal line when you're inside the red zone. So, you know, the Patriots are one of those teams now where they're not going to beat themselves. You have to go out and execute. And if you make a mistake, they're going to jump all over it. And that's what they did, I thought, against the Raiders.
Totally. I mean, Crabtree was targeted 11 times. He caught 6 passes for 51 yards. That's not where the Raiders want their leading receiver to be. I mean, I think they got caught in this sort of, they want to go deep, but Carr also wants to get the ball out really fast. And then guys are dropping passes all over the field. And then sometimes, I mean, even without a ton of pressure, Carr was just throwing to no one. In a couple instances, just inexplicable. So that's sort of the same thing where, you know, the Patriots will take other teams' mistakes, and every week there's a couple critical moments where the other team just can't execute, and then the Patriots aren't going to give them any mistakes of their own to make up for it.
Yeah, I think you described it perfectly, and you mentioned Oakland trying to go deep. They weren't successful doing that. The Patriots certainly were with Brandon Cooks. He had a huge game against the Raiders, 6 catches for 149 yards and a 64-yard touchdown.
And here they're going to go long again. Oh, but it's Cooks! Cooks! No one near him! Touchdown, New England!
He's now 4th in the NFL in receiving yards with 786. He's averaging 17.5 yards per catch. His 6 receptions on the season of 40 yards or more are the best in the NFL. So after all that, why are people talking like Brandon Cooks hasn't produced or has been some sort of disappointment?
Maybe it's because he hasn't done this every single week, and that's totally unrealistic. And I would not say Brandon Cooks has been a disappointment. You know, a lot of things have to go right to get those 64-yard touchdowns. That's not going to happen all the time. You know, first of all, the line has to hold up. Brady has to have time to make that throw. So it's not just on Cooks. I think sometimes sort of all of the things that have to feed into the deep passing game get put on the receiver to say, oh, well, he's not this explosive player. Snap in and snap out. I don't even want to say week in and week out. And then, you know, it's also just not what the Patriots do to really feed one guy and just chuck it for the sake of chucking it. And, you know, one other thing is that we were talking about the Patriots taking what the Raiders would give them, not making mistakes and executing based off of Oakland's mistakes. Okay, so Brady and Cooks make a great play on that 64-yard touchdown. But another thing is that you have Obi Melanfonwu in coverage playing cornerback. He's a safety, has very little experience playing cornerback, didn't do it in college. And I thought it was interesting that after the game, Jack Del Rio said, you know what, yeah, maybe that was a little bit of a desperate move that we tried to move him there.
Yeah, the Raiders have struggled in pass defense. I mean, you know, you have to try something. Obviously, that didn't work. That really backfired on them. There's no question about that. So we know Brandon Cooks is being really productive, a guy who hasn't been productive the last 2 games because he hasn't been active. Is Patriots running back Mike Gillisley, again, inactive the 2nd consecutive game. What do you make of that? Because it seems like Deion Lewis is ascending. Deion Lewis caught a touchdown pass from Tom Brady. He averaged 6 yards a carry in this game, 10 carries for 60 yards. Mike Gillisley is, you know, over on the sidelines in street clothes.
Yeah, they just have this glut of running back talent. And it's hard to figure out, especially because, you know, a lot of the time, going forward, I think they're going to want to have 4 tight ends active, particularly because Jacob Hollister plays on a lot of the special teams units. So it's a numbers game more than anything else. You know, Gillisley had that fumble and the other guys are performing, although I didn't think Rex Burkhead had his greatest game. So, you know, maybe you watch that and you see if he gets another chance. But ultimately, it's more that you can only play so many guys. You can only dress so many guys other than Gillisley, you know, them not feeling like Gillisley could contribute because he's obviously a talented guy that could give them something.
Yeah, I mean, he has been there. He was their leading rusher entering yesterday, no longer. But I think it's pretty clear at this point that Deion Lewis has established himself as the primary back, at least when they're running the football. I mean, James White is the guy that is probably going to touch the football the most because he's the pass-catching back, and we all know what he can do going back to Super Bowl 51 and his heroics there. But I think Deion Lewis has established himself clearly as the lead running back when it comes to the run game. And look, it's a high-class problem for the Patriots. I think Gillislee has had a pretty solid season, certainly not the year he had last year when he led the NFL in yards per rush, but he's a guy that would be active on a lot of teams and with a lot of teams' rosters. I want to ask you about something you wrote about in the Boston Globe, Steven Gostkowski kicking this 62-yard field goal right before the half.
Gostkowski from 62 yards, and again, well past and into the net with plenty to spare.
Yeah, so this was part of their plan here. Gostkowski booted one from 70-ish, is, you know, what the Patriots are saying, at Air Force Academy earlier in the week, or last week at this point. And when they were having their game planning meeting, Bill Belichick said, we're going to let him try it from getting close to 70 yards. And he was just excited. I mean, Foxborough is not the easiest place to kick, and he's done that for so long that getting that chance, I think, was really cool for him.
Yeah, definitely. Our colleague Ben Volen of the Globe, I thought, had a great tweet in pregame warmups. He was watching Gostkowski, and he said, this is like kicking on the moon. So I thought that was pretty funny, and it sort of portended the fact that Gostkowski was going to make a very, very long field goal. All right, we're going to take a brief time out here on Season Ticket when we come back with Nora Princiati. She's going to set the scene for us down in Mexico City, the pageantry of American football south of the border. Stay tuned for that. Welcome back. If you like Season Ticket, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, subscribing is the best way to make sure you get the latest episode as soon as it's available. All right, we're back here with Nora Princiati, Patriots beat writer for the Boston Globe. She's joining us from Mexico City. So what was the scene like, Nora, in Mexico City for this game? It's the third time a regular season NFL game has been contested in Mexico City at the world-famous Estadio Azteca, which has hosted two World Cup finals in football, that is soccer to us here in the United States. But it looked like it was pretty cool. I mean, watching it on TV, the fans definitely seemed to be into it. And I know, again, our colleague Ben Volen had a story where he talked to a lot of Mexican NFL fans, and he said it really wasn't any different than being in an NFL city.
Sure, yeah. I mean, the atmosphere was crazy. There's more than 77,000 fans in the stands, and they're just loud. I mean, and they did not give up, because there's a lot of Raiders fans here. I wouldn't say it was quite as lopsided as I thought it was going to be. One thing that I think works in the Raiders' favor in terms of the crowd, or at least just the optics of it, is that there's a thing with Raiders fans where they don't just wear a jersey. They paint their faces and have crazy hats and jewelry and all
they look like they're right out of Mad
stuff.
Max, pretty much.
Yes, totally. And a lot of Patriots fans just, you know, they've got their number 12, and they're just going to go to the game. So I think sometimes they, you know, the cameras will pan to these Raiders fans who are decked out in all this silver and black stuff, and it's like there's nobody else in the stands. That was not the case. There were a lot of Patriots fans there, although I would say that there were more Raiders fans than Patriots fans. And, you know, the Raiders didn't score until the fourth quarter, and it was still just, the place just erupted.
He's got his man. Cooper reaches for the pylon. Touchdown, Raiders.
So it was really cool. And, you know, this is a little bit inside baseball, but we had an open air press box, which doesn't usually happen at an NFL stadium. So it was just it was incredible. I mean, it was so loud in there. I remember thinking, during warmups, the place was a third full, and it was still just deafening. So it seems like they're into football here. They might just be into everything, but it was really cool.
How different did it feel to you than, say, if the Patriots were playing a road game in Oakland or Los Angeles against the Rams?
You know, there was a huge plaza wrapping around the stadium, and there's street food, and the stadium itself is interesting because they have these sort of stripes and different levels where there's couches. but they're not really closed off. There's just sort of a level of people kind of lounging around watching the game. And then there's regular stadium seating above and below. You know, I think people were just having a lot of fun. Every single statue or banner that was outside the stadium, there were just lines for what seemed like miles of people wanting their friends to take their pictures. And so it just seemed like people were really, really into it.
You know, look, Mexico City has done such a good job hosting these games that the NFL announced on Sunday they're going to extend the agreement with Mexico City and with Mexico and the tourism ministry there to play games there. So now there are going to be NFL games at Estadio Azteca through the 2021 season. So obviously the NFL likes what they're seeing and what they're hearing from Mexican football fans. To go back to the Patriots here, Nora, and actually one of the other unique elements I thought of this game in the stadium was this long ramp you had to take back to the locker rooms, and guys had to walk up this long ramp. And we know this because Stephon Gilmore and Danny Amendola had to go back to the locker room during this game because they got dehydrated. So the Patriots did spend the entire week out in Colorado Springs at the Air Force Academy, that elevation more than 6,000 feet above sea level. Did that make a difference for them against the Raiders? And you still saw guys, like I mentioned, Gilmore and Amendola, who obviously succumbed to the altitude.
So I think it did make a difference. I think it's more of a combination of factors than just purely having gotten acclimated to working out at high altitude. You know, really to acclimate, it takes a couple weeks, not like 10 days, but it certainly helped. And then I also just think logistics-heavy operations favor the Patriots. So I just think this could have been a really kind of taxing 10 days going to three different cities, one of them international, you know, being on the bus all the time, flying a lot, not as much as if they'd gone home and then gone to Mexico, but still, I think they do handle these things very professionally. They're very organized. I think guys go to bed on time. They do make sure that they have all the portable hot tubs and cold tubs. They make sure guys get humidifiers in the dry air because, yeah, more than the dehydration, you know, you think of the lack of oxygen, but the air up high is really, really dry. I mean, everyone I know has been like slathering chapstick for the last 10 days. So, you know, you saw it with the Raiders too. You had Marshawn Lynch was having a great game, but he kept waving to the sideline saying like, give me a second. I need to catch my breath here. And it seemed like a lot of the Raiders kind of plod back to the huddle and they just didn't have a lot of bounce in their step. So I think you could see it in both teams, but it did seem like the Patriots, they lasted and they had more energy. And I got to think that spending the week in Colorado contributed to that.
So we'll chuck that one up to Bill Belichick right again. I wanted to ask you about the rest of the AFC East, which basically is self-destructing right before our eyes. The Jets didn't lose on Sunday, but that's only because they had a bye and they didn't play. When you look at the rest of the AFC East, the Bills made, to me, Nora, one of the more curious and ill-advised decisions I've seen by a head coach in a long time. They started rookie quarterback Nathan Peterman. It went about as well as you would expect. He threw 5 interceptions in the first half against the Los Angeles Chargers yesterday. He was 6 of 14 at halftime. That meant he had 6 completions to his own team and 5 of them to the Chargers. Only one of those completions went for a touchdown. Unfortunately for him, it was one of the balls he threw to the Chargers.
Peterman rolling and throwing off the hands of DeMarco and intercepted. Patrick DeMarco couldn't hold it. Corey Toomer has it. And down the sideline, he tightropes. Corey Toomer is in for a Charger touchdown.
The Bills have now allowed 34, 47, and 54 points during their 3-game losing streak. That's an average of 45 points per game. You just look at that, I would say, I don't think the quarterback was the problem when you're allowing 45 points per game on defense. I also want to talk about the Miami Dolphins. They lost their 4th straight game, dropping a 30-20 decision at home to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They turned the ball over 5 times and committed 17 penalties. So clearly the Patriots are playing their best football of the season, not so much for their AFC East brethren.
Yeah, and that's basically, you know, except for the Steelers game, that's who they're playing down the stretch.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, the AFC East, it feels like that ninth consecutive AFC East title is pretty much all but locked up. I mean, barring a catastrophe. I think it's just amazing, though, on a year-in and year-out basis, that these other teams falter the way that they do. And really, it's not just faltering, it's self-inflicted wounds here, whether it's a bad decision by a rookie head coach and Sean McDermott in Buffalo, or the Dolphins committing 17 penalties in a game. I mean, you can't win a game when you turn the ball over five times and commit 17 penalties. We've talked, you know, on the show about the Patriots forcing other teams into mistakes and capitalizing on them. I mean, this is really the story of their run in the AFC East, their ability to capitalize on these other teams' self-inflicted wounds here. And you're right, at this point, we're looking outside of the division to that game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are also 8-2. The two teams are tied for the best record in the AFC. The Kansas City Chiefs, they lost on Sunday to the New York Giants, so they now have four losses on the season. So it seems like it's a two-horse race, and everything's pointing towards December 17th at Heinz Field in Pittsburgh, Patriots at Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, and the Steelers, I think, have the tiebreaker, so that's probably going to be for home field. I mean, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but that's certainly what it feels like, because that December 17th game is kind of going to be for all the marbles.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's obvious you've covered the Patriots for a while, because you said, I don't want to get ahead of myself. That's normally what the players say, and they're chastised by Bill Belichick. We're media members. We're allowed to get ahead of ourselves here, Nora. But still, I can see that the Patriots culture has sort of permeated your mindset as well.
I would say it's also just covering the NFL, because weird stuff happens, but you're right.
Well, it just seems, again, I mean, the Patriots will return to the field on Sunday against the Dolphins. There's a lot of division games coming up here. They have four division games. Actually, it's five division games, because they play Miami twice, Buffalo twice, and then they finish with the Jets. So I will correct myself. It's five division games. I think the NFL did this thinking, oh, this will make it competitive. You know, the Patriots will have to win these division games. Well, now these other teams are self-destructing. It actually would have been better if they had played the Bills when the Bills were off to their 5-2 start, because now the Bills are clearly faltering. Nora, thank you so much for joining us from Mexico City.
Absolutely, Chris.
All right, that's Nora Princiati. You can find her on Twitter, at Nora Princiati. She does a fantastic job covering the Patriots, and she's definitely going to be on Season Ticket again very soon. That's it for this edition of Season Ticket. Be sure to tell a friend about us and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, if you like us, please leave us a review. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.